Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department with terrific technicians that take care of the life of your vehicle. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. LeBron James breaks the scoring record last night, doesn't it, in about 120 fewer games than Kareem? May have started his career later, but did it in fewer games, to his credit, than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And not only that, it's a record that has an excellent chance of not being broken because of, in part, longevity and load management. You don't have many guys going out cranking out 82 games a year anymore. You've got a lot of guys playing in the 65-game range because of load management. They're not going to get, you know, somebody plays 20 years, they may not have enough games to break it. So that is LeBron breaking the record last night. That will be our play-by-play call of the day, by the way, once we get to it. Kim Jones today, Peter King today. Tomorrow, Ray Dittinger, and the King will be on Friday's show. We get rolling now with the Matt Cotrillo rant of the day.
Oh, I got one today.
Oh, jeez.
Because it's unfolding right now with Roger Goodell's press conference at the Super Bowl, as he does every year. If you want to tune into a press conference that is the most clueless and tone-deaf you'll ever hear, then you'll want to tune into this press conference. Let's start off with this. Roger Goodell, on the state of today's officiating, and I quote, "I don't think it's ever been better." I'm going to read it again. "I don't think it's ever been better."
No good! No good! No good!
Someone must be bringing over Cuban cigars over to Phoenix for Roger Goodell to smoke because he's in total la-la land right now.
You know you're right because that first touchdown the Eagles had against the 49ers never should have counted.
You're right. I'm there.
That was just a joke. I was just kidding around. Go ahead, Nick.
I mean, I'm primarily talking about what happened with the in the AFC Championship game, but yeah. So that's one. Number two,
all Eagle fans, I'm just kidding around. It's an easy, cheap joke. I specialize in that.
And then this is number two. Once again, Roger Goodell is trying to screw over the NFL fan base. And I'll tell you what, I'm not saying the NFL is never going to be taken down as king one day. I'm not saying that because I don't think that'll ever happen because that's the monster that the NFL is. But the more of these decisions that come through of Roger Goodell not leaving well enough alone, I've said that plenty of times, that Roger Goodell needs to leave well enough alone, then maybe you might start seeing some cracks. Because there's many different ways that the fan has been screwed over by this by the NFL sometimes because it's trying to get more and more TV revenue. And I get that's where the business of sports is going. I'm not naive to that fact. But at the same time, though, fans in the stands is what helps create the good television that's on those networks. So now, by saying it wouldn't surprise him, starting this season, actually, you're going to start flexing Monday night games. And then say it would not be surprising if you eventually flex Thursday night games. I mean, I don't know how more tone deaf you can be to your fan base. You better, if you're going to go this route, you better give plenty of notice to fans. Because you're going from being able to go on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday night to then maybe having to change your plans to going during a work night. And that's not going to keep butts in seats over time, because fans may just simply not be able to do it because of work and travel schedules. But secondly, it's going to tick fans off to a point where they won't want to put up with it and not buy said ticket. So once again, Roger Goodell, the NFL is continuing to thrive despite some of the most tone-deaf decision-making by Roger Goodell.
Oh, you're done? I'm sorry.
I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't want to interrupt. You're on a roll.
It's like, again, what are we doing?
Hey, I talk about this in college all the time. The NFL has nothing on college football. I was on a show yesterday. Was it? It was yesterday, Tuesday. I was asked, what I didn't like about college sports, if there's anything I would change. And one of the first things I brought up was 6-day windows, which, everybody's heard me talk about that who knows how many times on the show in the 11-plus years I've done this on WKOK. So I brought it up over and over again. You can't tell 12 days out when a game should kick off. I mean, you shouldn't be in the TV business. I'm sorry. You're not good at your job. In fact, you're terrible at your job if you need to, wait till Sunday to figure out what time a game should kick off. I mean, I don't know what the Big Ten's new contracts with Fox, CBS, NBC. I don't know where that stands on 6-day windows. I think I'd like to find out. But it's we have to stop. The TV money is there. I got it. TV money is there. And guess what? It's not going to change. You have a contract. Well, the contract says that we're going to air a game on Thursday night. Here's the game. Contract says game's going to be on Monday night. Here's the game. Now, if you want to flex a couple of games late in the season, sure, but not to Thursday night. In fact, the Players Association ought to yell and scream all they can about, we're not flexing to Thursday night.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be that, too, which is all under the can of worms.
But they should.
Absolutely, they should.
It's one thing to mentally sit there and know that you're going to play one Thursday night game a year. Right? Unless it's your opening game. If you're playing the opening game, a Thursday game in the middle of the year is your one. It's not the opener. Because, the opener is the opener. But if the Players Association is going, what? You're going to flex a game to Thursday night? In other words, we're going to play on a Sunday and have to come back and play on a Thursday? No way. What, just so you can, so Amazon Prime? Hey, Amazon elected to buy games. Guess what? You end up with the schedule you got. I have nothing but the highest regard and respect for Al Michaels. Okay? Nothing but the highest regard and respect. But you can tell he's not happy with the schedule. I understand that, but it is what it is. It is what it is. I've told people a whole bunch of times. I mean, tonight's game for Penn State's an important game with Wisconsin, but I put the same effort into that game as I did the Quinnipiac game. My job is to broadcast the game in front of me. I mean, not every game is going to be Purdue, right? Not every football game is going to be Ohio State. Got to do a game with Ohio University. This upcoming season, I'll have to do a game with Delaware. Guess what? I'm going to throw the same effort into it as I would the Ohio State game. That's the way it is. But they, you know, so flexing a game to Thursday night? Come on. That makes, I'm sorry. Now, why are you pandering to TV when your TV deal goes another 9 years? Maybe if you were desperate in the last 2 years of the contract, okay. But I look at, like, let's see. What's tonight's game's at 8:30. Let me see what's on tonight. When Penn State played at Wisconsin, it was an 8:30 start. Okay. So ask yourself, exactly what was the 6:30 game when they played at Wisconsin? Anybody know? There was no 6:30 game. Why did Penn State have to play at 8:30 at night on the road and get back at 2:30 in the morning? Why? Because that was the TV slot they had. Now, tonight, the opener is Nebraska at Michigan. Okay, I got it. And Wisconsin's at Penn State. So that's their 6:30, 8:30 doubleheader. It's not great for Wisconsin, but Wisconsin's staying here tonight. They are not leaving. They're going to go to Nebraska tomorrow. So that's how they're going to do it. I've already talked about that. But the fan in the stands, I'm sorry, that's your platinum right there. Yeah, I mean, do they now make up the majority of the money you get? No. Your TV money in college sports is still, I mean, it's at the point now that's where you're getting your money from. That's the difference-making money, whether it's the TV money, the college football playoff money, the NCAA tournament money, whatever it may be. And yes, Penn State does. Penn State may not make the tournament. Haven't made it, obviously, since 2011, but they still get an NCAA tournament cut. Just like Indiana gets bowl money. So that's where money is coming from. But that fan in the stands is gold. And every time the stands are relatively empty, it's like, oh, wow, it's really taking an effect on what's going on here. That's why people marvel all the time about all of you at Beaver Stadium, 107,000 people over and over again. I mean, believe me, TV loves you. I mean, TV loves you. Because it brings the ambiance through the set. You can't keep treating the fan in the stands like they're an afterthought. You can't do that. Whether you're the NFL or whether you're the Big Ten, you can't treat the fans as an afterthought. You people are gold. You're platinum. You're the one that makes the effort. You make the drive. You go through the bad weather. You have to fight to get the parking space. You're the one that has to walk into the arena or the stadium. You're the one that buys the concessions. You're the one that bought the tickets. You're the one that provides the atmosphere. You're the one that, when it's over with, has to get up and walk back to the parking lot. You're the one that has to get in the car. You have to drive home. And who knows what hour you're going to get there. You can't, I mean, TV is invaluable so we can see every game. TV is invaluable because of the money it provides to all the entities, whether it's the NFL or whether it's the Big Ten, whatever it may be. The TV numbers have never been better. The viewership has never been better. It's, you know, it's terrific. But the effort of the person at home, because, by the way, the person that bought the ticket and drove in and the whole thing, they paid their cable bill too, you know. The person at home paid the cable bill, got up, turned the game on, went, oh, yeah, great, bump, turned it off, went to sleep. You can't keep pandering to the TV side of it. You got to pander more to the fan side of it and include TV in it. I mean, these entities have to take more power. They're the ones providing the product. The NFL has a TV contract. They don't need to be flexing games to Thursday night at all. They already have their contract. Okay? These are the games you got. We worked with you in the offseason. This is the best we thought we could do. Okay. Live with it. Not going to flex a game to Thursday. It's not good for the players. It's not good for the game. And guess what? Amazon Prime's or Prime Video's rights fee is not going to go down if they're ending up with the Tennessee Titans and the New York Jets. It's not going to go down. And guess what? The rights fee on the Big Ten for the noon game between Northwestern and Rutgers, guess what? The rights fee is not going down because that's the game that is on BTN. And the contract's not up for 7 years. And you got to take control and power over your product. And you have to think about the fan in the stands with your product. You have to do everything you can to get the fan into the stands, as far as I'm concerned. TV's great. I mean, I'm thrilled I get to sit there and watch any game I want whenever I want. When I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, we had four channels. We were thrilled on a Saturday we could watch the Red Sox or the Bruins. Hey, great. Because during the week, we didn't get any games. So I know what it's like to sit there and go, well, let's listen to the radio, see how the game's going. Okay. Then on Saturday, hey, great, we can watch the Bruins. Yeah, hey, great, because the Bruins always played in the Saturday afternoon at home. Hey, great, we can watch the Red Sox. Hey. Yeah, that's the way it used to be for me growing up. You know, I can watch any game I want whenever I want. Right? I mean, Dick Girardi and I will tell you that we freely tortured ourselves. Look at the, you should have heard the conversation the two of us had today. About, he said, did you watch the Wisconsin Northwestern game? I said, yeah. And Dick says, oh, God, I tortured myself watching that game. I said, yeah, me too. I felt like water was dripping on my forehead because the game was just bad. But the point is, we had the ability to watch it. Is there anything else that is bothering you right now?
No, it's just the cluelessness of Roger Goodell. That's all. I've gotten everything off my chest.
Well, when it comes to the officiating part, that is the head of the company defending the company. Remember my complaint about Mark Emmert with the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments and how the women's tournament had complained about the bubble they were in with the weight room, the meals, and the gift bags. And Emmert basically took the men's committee and threw it under the bus. And it turned out, well, it didn't turn out. Everybody still thinks the narrative is still sitting there. But I know enough people in the NCAA, I know enough people there where I can tell you in no uncertain terms that the men's committee offered the women's committee the exact gift bags, and the women's committee said no because women prefer different gifts. And the men's committee is like, okay, we understand, that's fine. But they made the offer to make a double purchase. Okay? The men went to the NBA and said, how do you set up the bubble? We have no idea how to do this. They just assumed that the women's committee would go to the WNBA. And they didn't. They just kind of did it on their own. It wasn't the men's committee's fault at all. But they got thrown under the bus by their leader. Who, by the way, is not somebody that you would look at as an example of leadership. He has no feel for the job at all. Zero. But he threw them under the bus. So I don't expect the commissioner of the NFL to throw his officials under the bus, do you?
Not necessarily, but at least acknowledge that, hey, you know, there's always room for improvement. Well, we can go back and look at some things.
Oh, well, I mean, that's fine. That's a good enough answer. I agree with that answer. But I don't expect them to throw them under the bus because I don't like when management throws employees under the bus. I think it's, you know, especially in a hard job like that. And that is a hard job. It's a difficult job. But they do have to take a long, hard look at it. You've got to take care of simple, okay? Take care of the simple stuff and don't guess. I'll probably bring this up with Peter King when he's on. All right. Kim Jones, next half hour. Matt had applied to be the play-by-play voice of the Jacksonville Jaguars, but I guess based on the text I just got from Roger Goodell, that's now out.
I'd pass on the Jags.
You'd take that job in a heartbeat.
Actually, yeah, I would. That's a total lie.
Jason Horowitz is going to be here tonight. He does the Raiders. Jason and I had a long talk about the Raiders job. All right. Let me put it this way. You'd take the job in a heartbeat. I got a whole bunch of zeros to tell you why.
Exactly.
You would sell yourself.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing, they can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. So wonderful to hear the voice on the other end. Now at Newsday, Kim Jones. Hello, Kim. Welcome back.
Well, hello, Steve. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
How's the new job going?
It's going well. I joined probably a month before the season ended, so I hit the ground running, which is, for me, the best way to do it. So, everything's great.
When you look at the NFL season, and you mentioned you were there the final month.
Yep.
So being around the Giants, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you got a chance to see, obviously, the Eagles up close and personal on a couple of occasions. Yep. One was against a makeshift Giants team. What was your thought?
Yeah, the two occasions that everyone played were not pretty for the Giants, that's for sure. And as you noted, the Giants sat out with most of their starters and key players, including Saquon, towards the end of the season, so we don't count that one. But the two that were competitive weren't all that competitive. So the playoff game in particular, I think, had to be disappointing for the Giants, but I think it showed what an organization like the Eagles has done, particularly in building its lines, the offensive and defensive line. They are absolutely dominant there. And while that isn't, the sexiest thing to talk about when you talk about football and scoring points and everything else, it certainly does everything that Jalen Hurts needs them to do. It certainly does every single thing that the secondary needs to do in terms of the Eagles' defense. They control the line of scrimmage much more often than not, Steve, and that was very apparent not only against the Giants, but against other teams as well, but particularly against the Giants, that was glaring because the Giants aren't exactly in that kind of position.
Right, and Brian Daboll's son, Christian, is one of the young men that signals in the plays here at Penn State.
And Dave and I have talked about his son multiple times, believe me. And he loves James Franklin, does Brian Daboll. He loves Penn State. He was there at one point. You probably know that part better than I in terms of a timing of it, but I know he was there. And he is ecstatic that his son had that experience at Penn State and under James. So I think I jumped you there, but I think that's really important to note that, you know, Brian Daboll, you know, had a whole lot to worry about this season, but family's very important to him, you know, as it should be, as it is for most of us, I think. And he kept close watch on his son and was very impressed with everything he saw.
In fact, the Thanksgiving Day game was the Giants and the Cowboys. He was then Brian and his wife and the younger ones were here for Christian's game with Michigan State. So I got a chance to talk to him then when he was here. A terrific guy, but, I mean, let's face it. I'll tell you directly what I told him. You don't have a depth of, like what you consider big-time NFL talent, and you still are doing this.
Right.
So, I mean, Kim. It's a fact.
Yeah, he... I'll tell you what he did, Steve, and it's a long story that I'll make short for these purposes, of course. He had to resurrect the Giants from what Joe Judge had wrought. I have nothing personally against Joe Judge. He was always nice to me, for whatever that's worth. And believe me, if you're nice to beat writers, it does usually matter, including, you know, on NFL. In NFL situations, they give you a little more of a benefit of the doubt. You have them go up to your suite on the road in preseason. You order a bunch of Bud Lights, and the guys, the beat writers, end up and columnists end up feeling good around you. So they like Joe Judge, and I get that. I understand. I understand how all of this works. Joe Judge brought so much ruin to the New York Giants.
No doubt.
That Brian Daboll almost by default was going to be successful, but that's not why he was successful, Steve. He was successful because he acted like an adult in the room, because he encouraged players on the practice field, if you make a mistake, we're not going to have you run laps. We are going to have you understand what the mistake is so you don't make it on game day. Those kinds of things to you and me probably seem pretty simplistic and pretty obvious, but in the NFL, you run into, you know, some folks who think they're going to reinvent the game, and they're just not, and they're also not going to reinvent the way young men feel about themselves in terms of their work product, meaning NFL players, their work product, their pride, and the fact that they all want to win, Steve. Some of them, A, don't know how to, and some of them have coaches who don't know how to.
Right.
The Giants, regards, are now in great position.
Right, exactly. Because it's ironic you bring that up. That is going to be, I haven't done the pregame show with Micah Shrewsbury yet for tonight's game, but the first question I literally was going to ask him is, how important will it be for your team to execute simple tonight?
Right.
Right. That's the first question I actually will be asking him. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I don't think everyone understands that as much as we try to complicate things, you got to take care of simple first.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And I'm sure we'll get to Saquon at some point. But
that's next.
The New York Giants also have a core. It's not the biggest core in the world, but a core of players who want to do right, who want to be part of completely fixing this situation. And I say that knowing, of course, they were a playoff team this year, but their playoff stay lasted one game, and then the second game, you know, was against the Eagles, where they weren't not in the same class, as we've discussed. So, I think that for this team and for where this team is headed, they have a core group of leaders. And I think, as you noted, we're going to talk about one who we both like and respect very much next.
And his birthday is tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And that is Saquon Barkley. The contract is now up. So, and I know that he's not into a groundbreaking contract for a running back, But what do you think the circumstances are on his side, and what are the circumstances on the Giants' side?
I think the expectation within the building, the Giants' building, is that not only Saquon, but Daniel Jones, and I'll tell you why I'm bringing up Daniel with Saquon in a moment, that they will both be back in the building in those roles because they are deemed very important to, hate to use the word because it's overused, but the culture of these Giants. And you know Saquon well, Steve, so you certainly understand why he's important in that regard and why steam comes out my ears when I listen to sports talk radio in New York with people, including some who played the game, who criticize Saquon, and they have no earthly idea of how much he does for a room and for a team. And that stuff drives me nuts, and I can't fight it because I'd spend too much time fighting it and I'd lose my mind completely. But sure. With Saquon, I do believe, first of all, Saquon has told me many times this season that he views himself and Daniel Jones as a package deal. Right. That's how much he respects the quarterback. So that's interesting to me. Daniel Jones is going to be back because the general manager told us that after the season ended. And one way or another, he'll be back if that's the case, because they can franchise him if somehow they can't come to a deal. Mm-hmm. Now, with Saquon, he was offered about $12.5 million a year, a contract with that number at the team's buy, and he and his camp turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Christian McCaffrey's in like the $18 million range. I don't think the Giants have that kind of a number for Saquon. I just don't think that they do. Could they, you know, move the number a little bit so it's more than what he turned down, you know, at the bye week? Yeah, they could do that, and I think that's where this thing will end up in terms of Saquon staying with the Giants and staying with the Giants at a number that makes everyone comfortable.
Well, you and I both know that the vast majority of stuff like this, where people talk and fill time, they don't spend any time around these people. I mean, really, they don't.
True.
They don't really know what he's like. They've never seen him practice before. They've never seen him pull a younger player aside to teach them what to do and what they don't do. I mean,
right.
I've never seen it. I mean, I saw Saquon do that with Miles Sanders, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Miles Sanders seems pretty good. I mean, that's, you and I both know that a lot of this is done from 30,000 feet. So that's why you try not to fight it too much.
Yeah, and in fairness, I do it with other players from that distance. You know, so in fairness, Saquon just happens to be a player that you and I both know well.
Right.
And, you know, because we know him well, we have that kind of respect for him.
Is it any coincidence that Josh Allen's numbers changed dramatically this year and Daniel Jones's numbers changed dramatically this year because of one move of one coach?
Yeah, well, I think with Josh it was more the elbow. I think that he was playing through the elbow injury for so long, because my guess from afar now, although I know Josh pretty well from my times in Buffalo, but candidly, I did not see him at all in person this season. You know, I think with Josh, he knows the responsibility he holds to that organization, and he was going to play as long as he possibly could play. And he played. I don't think that he was exactly at his best in those games down the stretch. And I think the injury probably did play into that. So, you know, with Josh, you know, that's kind of where I am. With Daniel Jones, I think he absolutely found a comfort zone with Brian Daboll. I think Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka, who's up for, you know, now up for head coaching jobs already. He was on the Kansas City staff, he was on Daboll's staff, and now he's being interviewed as a head coaching candidate. You know, I think that they had a comfort zone for Daniel of what would make him be most effective. And the thing that they've done, obviously, most importantly, and in my mind, probably second most impressively, is they've just cut down so much on the turnovers. The way he's impressed me the most, for whatever that means, and between you and me it might mean something. No one else cares what I'm impressed with Daniel Jones, but I understand that. But is Daniel Jones somehow, some way, improved his pocket presence? And mm-hmm. I had talked with a number of NFL coaches, executives, whatever, over the years about, can you improve your pocket presence? And enough of them told me no, that there, and I was already inclined that way, that I believed it. Mm-hmm. With Daniel Jones, somehow he has improved that this year, and that's because of the great quarterback coaching he got, and with the Dable impact as well. So Daniel Jones has come many, many strides. Saquon came into this league with a burst, right? He was rookie of the year. He was wow. He was this. He was that. He's a better player now, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But he came in with a burst. Daniel came in with a question mark, and it wasn't until this year that he answered it.
Well, I'll give everybody an example. Bill O'Brien, I thought, did wonders with Matt McGloin's pocket presence.
Yes, right. That's a good one, sure.
So you can do that, and mm-hmm. you and I have witnessed that before, that you can do that. Very quickly, when you've talked to people, especially within the Giant organization, and they talk about Jalen Hurts, what do they tell you?
Well, I think overall there is just great admiration for what this young man has done. You know, he had to go to Oklahoma, right? He had to leave Alabama because of Tua. He did that. He got there, and Steve, I remember in real time at the Combine, so however many, couple of years ago, I talked to one of his Oklahoma teammates. It was a big nose tackle whose name, unfortunately, I forget at the moment, but it doesn't matter that much. But and I asked about Jalen Hurts, and he said, this is the Oklahoma kid who Hurts joined the team, of course. And I said, what is it about him? And he said, the one thing about Jalen that impressed me the most is he made the move to us, to Oklahoma, and never complained, never badmouthed Alabama, never did anything, but wanted to play his hardest, his best, and wanted to lead this team. And when you resonate like that in a locker room, and you have the skill and the abilities that a guy like Jalen Hurts has, you're pretty tough to beat, because guys respect you and they want you to succeed. And I know that sounds simplistic. Well, everyone wants their teammates to succeed. Yeah, but there are degrees of that, Steve, and you and I know that. So I think with Jalen Hurts, I think it's been – this is not a short answer, for which I apologize, but I think what Jalen Hurts has done has been pretty remarkable. And listen, I picked the Eagles. They made us make a pick. I picked the Eagles. I hope I'm right. I'd love to see, you know, Jalen Hurts win a championship when so many people told him he couldn't do it.
Well, you know what? He's a coach's son. It shows.
You're right. Good point. Right? Yep.
Yeah, he's a coach's son. It shows. And number two, you and I both know the old saying, the humility to prepare, the confidence to pull it off. Well, preparation happens when nobody's watching. You can tell in the off season he put in so much work, he made himself a more accurate thrower.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And two off seasons ago, Steve, he visited every offensive teammate, either in Philly or in Florida or in Texas, depending where people were. And he wanted to get to know them. And you can't tell me that didn't matter, because I believe, you know, I firmly believe that stuff matters.
Oh, I think that stuff matters, especially in the spot you're in as a quarterback. Because you were automatically thrust into the leadership spot. And guess what? He's been in that spot his whole life.
Yep.
And people gravitate toward him at every level, whether it was Alabama, Oklahoma, Philadelphia Eagles. That tells you something when every single time you go someplace, people gravitate toward you.
Yep. Agreed. Absolutely agree, Steve.
Kim, it's always a pleasure. Just love just sitting here and just talking football with you anytime.
I know. We could have done it for a few more minutes, but I appreciate the time so much. It's always awesome to talk to you, Steve.
Same here. Thanks, Kim. And they are so lucky to have you. I'll shout that to the hills. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. Okay, right. Take care now.
Kim Jones, Newsday. All right. Peter King, next half hour. We'll talk with him about not just the matchup, but about the ride-in with Nick Sirianni. He's done this with every coach over the years, although I think Todd Bowles, he had to do it because of COVID on the phone. But he's done this ride-in every year. And this time it was with Nick Sirianni. And it was eye-opening. Yeah. as always. I mean, they're always insightful. You're just kind of writing, just chit-chatting and doing his deal. And that's, like I said about, in talking to Kim, we're just talking, for goodness sakes. Now, Matt, we'll get back to the Bitterness Cafe a little bit later.
I can't possibly follow that up with having Kim Jones on.
Matt Cotrillo, proprietor, Bitterness Cafe.
You might be onto something, but we can't do that following Kim Jones because that was just fantastic.
No, well, the last half hour, I'll let you be as bitter as you want.
Well, actually, I'm leaving early today because I got Bucknell basketball. So I'll carry it over tomorrow. That's okay.
So you're so mad you're leaving.
In a way, sure.
Sure. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Peter King next. By the way, George Kliavkov, the Pac-12 commissioner, is visiting SMU today. He's already visited San Diego State. This is one of those where the Pac-10 feels that they need to get a couple of schools to get to 12 because that then increases the inventory they have. Inventory, by the way, for the uninitiated means games. And that's why they're looking to go from 10 to 12. It gives them more games that can be broadcast, and they feel that just by getting more games to broadcast, they can maybe get a little higher TV number. How much sway does TV have? Oklahoma and Texas, according to Brett McMurphy, the Action Network reached a deal to leave the Big 12 early, and ESPN and Fox weren't satisfied with the deal, and it got killed.